The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Here in Paris, let's reaffirm our commitment that resources will be there for countries willing to do their part to skip the dirty phase of development. Here in Paris, let's also make sure that these resources flow to the countries that need help, preparing for the impact of climate change that we can no longer avoid. Climate change is a threat to their very existence. And that's why today, in concert with other nations, America confirms our strong that the global economy is on a firm path towards a low-carbon future. If we put the right rules and incentives in place, let's send that signal. That's what we seek in these next 2 weeks.
Well, there you have it. As the U.S. president spoke yesterday about sending a signal to the world that we mean business this time about climate change. He repeatedly ignored the signal he kept getting from the conference organizers to wrap things up with a speech. He was just one of 147 world leaders, all of them given 3 minutes to outline their vision for the future of the planet. And the president of the United States went on for, I think it was about 14 minutes. And as you heard there, we were just repeatedly given the wrap it up beeps. And as a public speaker myself, I guess I can't be too critical of the president in this regard. I think over the past 20 years or so, I've been known to go overtime on more than one occasion. Any of my students probably could attest to that. But you really do have to just shake your head at how proactive this administration is when it comes to the subject of climate change. I mean, when it comes to so many other global concerns, this president, this administration, the United States has been quite happy these past 6-7 years to take a back seat, to let other nations step to the front and to take the lead, or at least to create a level playing field for all the nations on Earth. This is what the president said back in 2009 in front of the UN.
In an era when our destiny is shared, power is no longer a zero-sum game. No one nation can or should try to dominate another nation.
No one should dominate. Everyone's on a level playing field. Some have even suggested, even though the administration did try to back away from this a couple of years ago, but evidently there was an advisor or someone within the administration that talked about the foreign policy in the Obama administration being that of leading from behind. Leading from behind, but not on climate change. On climate change, this administration is front and center. This administration is taking a proactive approach. And why is this? I mean, you just heard the speech there. Those beeps did not slow him down at all. He didn't even try to hurry to get to the end, as I think a lot of speakers would have. Because this is too important. This subject has to be addressed. This is the greatest threat facing the world. That's what many of them believe. This is President Obama earlier this year. In his, I think it was a commencement address at the United States Coast Guard Academy.
And this is not just a problem for countries on the coasts or for certain regions of the world. Climate change will impact every country on the planet. No nation is immune. So I'm here today to say that climate change constitutes a serious threat to global security, an immediate risk to our national security. And make no mistake, it will impact how our military defends our country.
And so we need to act, and we need to act now.
It impacts the military. It impacts every nation on Earth, not just the coasts, not just the islands. Everybody's affected by this. No nation is immune. And so, as I covered yesterday, you have this massive distraction based upon, I think some would say, flawed science. But leaving the debate aside, look at the problems this world is facing and look at what the Bible prophesies. This is from the Times of London. November 30th, the doom mongers should look at science. Matt Ridley writes, he said today in Paris, 147 heads of government will give speeches on what they agree is the world's most pressing problem, climate change. Today is expected to be comparatively mild in Paris, but cold and snowy in Scotland. Nothing especially unusual for November 30th over the past few centuries, and then down later in the article. He says the problem they are discussing, not warming, but dangerous warming, has not yet manifested itself. It lies in the future, and that's the way it's been. Leading up to the 1970s, of course, it was global cooling. He talks about that here in this article in just a second. But coming back to that quote, he writes, the climate has changed for sure, as it always does, but not yet in a way that is harmful or unprecedented. Later on, he says, besides, we have to make allowance for a human tendency to read far too much into short-term weather changes and to assume that all change is bad. Consider this newspaper cutting. The Arctic Ocean is warming up. Icebergs are growing scarcer. And in some places, the seals are finding the water too hot. There are hitherto unheard-of temperatures in the Arctic zone. And Ridley says that's not from recent decades even. It's from 1922, that headline. Or that quote. What about this one, he writes. The ice of the Arctic Ocean is melting so rapidly that more than one-third of it has disappeared in 50 years. That's from 1940. And then finally, in fact, the Arctic and the world as a whole then cooled between 1950 and 1970, which then led to these headlines, all from 1970. Scientists see ice age in the future. Is mankind manufacturing a new ice age for itself? Scientists predict a new ice age by the 21st century. U.S. and Soviet press studies of a colder Arctic. And then he says, my favorite from the Sydney Morning Herald, dirt will bring new ice age. Dirt! That's from 1970. All these wild predictions. Wild predictions. And yet I bet if you talk to any of these world leaders about what the Bible prophesies, about these latter days, that they'd look at you and feel sorry for you. So many would scoff and ridicule the prophecies of God. Even as they go about making these wild predictions intended to scare people into submission, that's really what it's about. It's just a convenient excuse for power-hungry rulers to impose their will on the nations of this world, to carry out their vision, their warped vision of justice and equality for all of mankind. That's what it's about. It's a power grab. And so we see, we hear these wild, wild predictions. Even as we see so many prophecies being fulfilled, this next set of clips, there's actually two or three statements in here of leaders tying climate change to terrorism. Notice this.
A glimpse of our children's fate if the climate keeps changing faster than our efforts to address it. Submerged countries, abandoned cities, fields that no longer grow, political disruptions that trigger new conflict, and even more floods of desperate peoples seeking the sanctuary of nations not their own.
It's because by fueling extreme weather events, undermining our military readiness, exacerbating conflicts around the world, climate change is a threat to the security of the United States, and indeed to the security and stability of countries everywhere.
And in fact, there's very good evidence indeed that one of the major reasons for this horror in Syria, funnily enough, has been was a drought that lasted for about 5 or 6 years, which meant that huge numbers of people in the end had to leave the land because water ran out, their crops failed, and so on.
That last statement there was from Prince Charles. Before him, Secretary of State John Kerry, and then, of course, President Obama. And we could add others to the list. Those that have implied or even made a very direct connection between terrorism, the refugee crisis, things like this, and climate change. Now, if you come along and look at the world and look at what's actually happening and see refugees streaming into Europe and then find out that some of them are terrorists and one of the shooters, one of the killers in the attack on Paris just a couple of weeks ago, how that he used the refugee crisis to sneak in. If you point out the obvious, many of these same leaders leading so many of the nations of this world, here again, they'll shout you down for daring to connect the dots between this refugee crisis and how it poses a threat to national security. But you can definitely connect the dots between climate change and the refugee crisis. You can definitely connect the dots between climate change and terrorism, even. You think about what it says in Isaiah 3. Well, actually, we can turn over there. This is really a fulfillment of Bible prophecy and just the lack of leadership. Now, we've talked recently about a leadership change in Europe, and some of these things will change in Europe. It's going to be very different soon when a strong man appears, a strong man who is much more of a realist, a strong man who confronts real threats, prophesied threats even. But with so many of the leaders in the Israelitish nations, that would include the United States, that would include Britain, it is as it is. Because of what it says here, Isaiah 3 and verse 1, it says, "For behold, the Lord of hosts does take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff and the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water. The mighty man," it says, "the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent and the ancient, the captain of 50 and the honorable man, and the counselor, and the cunning artificer, and the eloquent orator." And it says in verse 4, "And I'll give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them." There's a real dearth of leadership within the Western democracies of today. And so even as we approach these prophesied catastrophes, so many don't see what's coming. And the situation in nations like Syria, Iraq, It just gets worse. And now leaders are rushing together to try to address root causes, when the root cause of the evil in Syria, when the root cause of the mass migration, the refugee crisis, these appalling acts of terror, if you want to talk about root causes, you have to talk about human nature. You have to talk about the God of this world. Talking about global warming. That's just a massive distraction, pure and simple. British political economist Rodney Atkinson, he said this several years ago, there's no greater danger to mankind than those politically motivated global power seekers who use scare tactics to acquire control over the masses and supranational constitutional control over free nations. He said the quality of politicians in the rich Western democracies is now so poor that groups of scientists and businessmen and ideologically motivated world government enthusiasts can easily manipulate them. It says climate change seemed to them a gift from heaven. Literally, it's a gift. It's a gift to these power seekers, to these global power seekers. Atkinson went on to label this global warming craze as a modern equivalent of medieval religious hegemony that, quote, terrified the ignorant and uneducated into submission. Just power seekers. Power seekers. Let's look at Matthew 24. And again, when you talk about the threats that mankind is facing, when you talk about something that's going to engulf the earth, you have to talk about nuclear warfare. Jesus Christ spoke of it. John described it, the Apostle John. Daniel, I mean, they used the terminology of their day. They didn't have all of the modern sophisticated weapons that we see proliferating over all the earth in our day. But sure enough, worldwide destruction and devastation is described in the Bible. And it's not brought on by climate change. It's brought on by human nature. Matthew 24 and verse 21, it says, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. Nothing like this in history. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." I mean, this is a problem that world leaders should be talking about as our greatest concern, our greatest threat today. That's the reality. That's what your Bible says. You look at history and all the weapons that man has created historically. He's used them. And World War II ended some 70 years ago with the use of a nuclear weapon or an atomic bomb. The technology had just surfaced for that kind of weapon of mass destruction. And today, 70 years on from that, there's some 15 or 16,000 nuclear weapons spread across 10 nations that we know of, 10 nations or so, all over the world. And then you have other nations scrambling to get a nuclear weapon of their own, not just Iran, but now others in Iran's neighborhood. This is what we need to be concerned about. Even as world leaders assemble to talk about global warming, it's global cooling that we should be discussing. Nuclear winter. What mankind is capable of triggering in a matter of seconds. And now think of this, this technology, these weapons of mass destruction. Think of it in the context of this present evil world, this terribly destabilized world that we live in. Think about it in the context of all these subjects we've been discussing with you of late. The refugee crisis, the security threats in Europe, at the United States southern border, the explosive events in the Middle East, the fight for Jerusalem, all the prophecies of God talking about Jerusalem and the King of the South and the beast power coming out of Europe. We see the rise of the kings of the East. We've talked to you about Vladimir Putin. There's an excellent article today at thetrumpet.com about this man, this leader of Russia. He's been there for 15 years, and read Brad McDonald's article and see how Mr. Putin came to power. That's the real world. That's the real world. I mean, here's one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful leader in the world today. And some would see him as a celebrity at this conference. Well, read Brad McDonald's article and see how he came to power. See how ruthless it was. He's been in power now for 15 years. And he's pushing. He's pushing his way into the Middle East. He's pushing his way into Eastern Europe. That's reality. These are the dangers that this world is facing. And every single nation on this earth is going to come face to face with this kind of threat, this kind of global threat, global cooling, you could call it, nuclear winter. That's what the Bible warns, and that's why we've gone through these prophecies over and over and over again. Now, there's a positive side to this. As we also point out, it does lead right into the return of Christ to this earth. But forget about the distractions, the childish leadership, the scaremongering, the wild predictions, and get your mind in the prophecies of God. So many of them are being fulfilled right before our eyes. Get your mind off of some man-made hoax and think about the truth of God. We'll have more to say on this in tomorrow's program and later this week as well. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available as well. As we've said so often, after the break, we'll get into a few more news stories and also give you a little more listener feedback later on the program, so you want to stay tuned for all of that. We'll be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Just a few more news items from yesterday and today that we can hurry through here, I think. This one here from the Daily Caller. This was a pretty amazing piece. But it says here, President Barack Obama wants Turkey to close its 60-mile-long border with Syria to end the influx of new Islamic State fighters pouring into Syria and Iraq. So he wants Turkey to seal its border, to close its border. If Turkey acquiesces to Obama's demands, it says, no entry points will remain between the two countries. The entire border is 550 miles long, according to the Wall Street Journal. And then the caller says, but a Turkish official quickly pointed out to the Wall Street Journal the irony in Washington's call to close off the border. How about this? Given the U.S. is completely unable to stop flows in and out of Mexico. And so the great United States tells Turkey to seal its borders, and Turkey says to the United States, how about if you seal yours? Pretty amazing exchange. And this I think, too, is revealing. In response, a U.S. official said, if we were at war with Mexico, we'd close that border. Well, then, all it takes is a war. If we were at war with Mexico, it would be no problem to close the border. But because we're not, and of course some would say we actually are experiencing or facing an invasion that really is bringing a lot of murderers and rapists into the United States. That's the truth. But here we've gone years and years and years, and nothing has been done to secure the United States southern border. And we go off and tell Turkey to close its border, and they respond by saying, well, why don't you close yours first? Look at how weak the United States is. And look at the example that's being set. This article here from The Spectator talks about Western nations combining resources to fight against ISIS. There in the Middle East, it says, the threat posed by terrorism is merely symptomatic of larger underlying problems. This is from thespectator.co.uk. Crush ISIS, it says, whether by bombing or employing boots on the ground, and those problems will still persist. A new ISIS under a different name, but probably flying the same banner, will appear in its place. Much as ISIS itself emerged from the ashes of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Someone else, as I read recently, says it's like a whack-a-mole strategy. You knock one out and then another one pops up. And it's all because the United States and the West won't go for the head of the snake. The nations that sponsor these terrorist groups. And so as this author here is saying in The Spectator, if we go and bomb them to smithereens, what good will it do? Does the West possess the wherewithal to sustain another long war, he asks? Only if the Allies wage that war exclusively from the air. And then he goes on to give all these statistics. The British Army is now the smallest it's been since the 19th century. Cameron's government has reduced it by 20% since coming to power. That's just under his administration, a 20% reduction. That's the UK. The French army today numbers just over 100,000. And it says that London and Paris will inevitably look to the United States to lead. But will the United States do this? I saw another article just recently where they've taken on an advisor to advise them on ISIS. And it just so happens that he comes from a background that's very much pro-Hamas and all the other terrorist groups and anti-Israel. Do you think the United States is really going to lead from the front or just settle back and let other nations take care of it? I mean, you have to understand, the United States has to lead the way on climate change. This is the greatest threat facing the world. They do believe. Well, he goes on and points out at The Spectator that even if the United States was involved, that their army is shrinking too. It's also considerably worn out by the trials of the past dozen or more years, he writes. Those who cheer from the bleachers may be eager for action. Those likely to be sent to fight, not to mention citizens who actually care about the well-being of their soldiers, may feel less keen. It says, finally, the fact is that Britain, France, the United States, and the other allies face a perplexing strategic conundrum. Collectively, they find themselves locked in a protracted conflict with Islamic radicalism, of which ISIS is but one manifestation. Prospects for negotiating an end to that conflict anytime soon appear to be nil. Alas, so too do prospects of winning it. There's just really no good options, is there, for these once great nations, the United States, the United Kingdom. No good options. Meanwhile, this Telegraph piece says that Germany's prepared to send 1,200 troops to fight the Islamic State. The German cabinet on Tuesday, this is from the Telegraph, approved a mandate offering military assistance to back and fight against the Islamic State jihadist group. It says the package will still, which still requires parliamentary approval, covers Tornado reconnaissance jets, a naval frigate, and up to 1,200 troops following a request from France in the wake of deadly jihadist attacks in Paris last month. And so Germany is starting to rumble. We've told you a lot about the German sentiment, the mood in Germany, and how it's changing. And now they're taking an active role in what's happening in Syria. Even as you see the nations of Israel, the descendants of ancient Israel, taking a back seat. One last piece here, shifting gears a little bit. This is how political correctness rules in America's student safe places. You may have seen a headline today from a college president, I believe in Oklahoma, who's taking a stand against what's happening on campuses in America and just how ridiculously childish some of these students are, telling them essentially to grow up. This piece from the Telegraph as well says Jeannie Suk, a professor at Harvard Law School, which numbers President Barack Obama among its many notable alumni, cited an example where a student had asked a colleague not to use the word violate, as in, does this conduct violate the law? Because the term might trigger distress. And then the Telegraph piece goes on and says, far from the bra-burning, devil-may-care attitudes at universities in the 60s and 70s, today's generation of American students increasingly appears to yearn for a campus ruled by dogmatic political correctness, in which faculty members assume the role of parents more than purveyors of academic rigor. It says the lexicon of colleges has changed. Students now speak about microaggressions, trigger warnings, and safe spaces. Joel Hilliker talked about this last week on the Trumpet Hour. And then there was the article yesterday, I believe, at thetrumpet.com on these microaggressions. The Telegraph says the notion of the safe place has emerged to describe a place of refuge for people exposed to racial prejudice or sexism, but the phrase has changed meaning to the point where now it often implies protection from exposure to ideas that make one uncomfortable. Notice this last paragraph. At Brown University, like Harvard, one of the eight elite Ivy League universities, the New York Times reported students set up a safe place or safe space that offered calming music, cookies, Play-Doh, and a video of frolicking puppies to help students cope with a discussion on how colleges should handle sexual assault. This is where our students, our children, are heading off to learn. This is where our children go to prepare for the world. And is it any wonder that so many of our leaders are caught up in some of the greatest hoaxes of the day? Massive distractions. Childish subjects in so many ways. A Harvard student described in the university newspaper attending a safe space complete with massage circles that was designed to help students have open conversations. Well, go back and read what Mr. Hilliker wrote there at thetrumpet.com on microaggressions that was posted just yesterday, so it should still be on the front page of the website. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond. The live stream is at kpcg.fm. Don't forget to send us your emails. We'll read through a few of those in just a few moments. But you can send those to us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the show. Email us, as I say, to td@kpcg.fm. We had a few responses come in after yesterday's update about the Mystery of the Ages goal. As we push hard to the 2,000 goal for the year, up over 1,700 now with just a few weeks left in the year. It says, just listen to, this is from Cincinnati, Ohio, just listen to the update for the Mystery of the Ages goal after the huge response to the most important book since the Bible. And I am pumped, he says. I was hoping with 480 needed going into the weekend that we would have a response like this to inspire a couple more programs to close the year out. Very excited for the potential of two more programs. This is big news. And then it says, curious if it is possible to provide a number on what a completion of the MOA goal means. I know that that would be 2,000 copies requested. Well, he goes on and basically asks about how many people this would impact. The fact that it goes into 2,000 homes and how many others in the homes might be seeing the book or reading it. Of course, we don't know a way to get exact numbers on that. In any event, he says later, it was also great to hear the tremendous response for the Holy Roman Empire booklet. Reminds us how important every book and booklet is to God's work and blowing the trumpet. And then he goes on to explain that he listens typically live on TuneIn and on the computer from time to time as well, and talks about how he works at a job where he has the luxury of being able to listen to headphones as he works. So he's one of our most dedicated listeners out there, and we certainly appreciate his feedback. That comes, as I say, from Ohio. This next one here from Florida says, good morning from Crawfordville. I've been listening to the program regularly since the start and have neglected to email as requested. Thank you all so much for all the hard work and overcoming personal fears and giving us this much-needed connection to the work, especially as world events are speeding up. It was so exciting to hear of the Mystery of the Ages request from the weekend program. It's so encouraging to know how it is growing like a mushroom cloud. I'm able to listen live when my schedule allows, but mainly listen on my phone through SoundCloud while my children are working on their schoolwork. I'm so thankful for every program and every opportunity to listen. It adds so much to the day and to my prayer life. Thanks again to each and every one of you. And then she has a few things to say about the Mystery of the Ages requests there at the end. And then finally, this one coming from a husband and wife team from Virginia, who write, we love your program. We listen always online. And then they say, go for it, Mr. Fleury. You sound so excited. 2,000 Mystery of the Ages. Here we come. Well, some encouraging feedback, as I say. Looks like we've got about 10 minutes left. And just to revisit, the problem with human beings, that human nature, I thought we could just roll through a few scriptures in Jeremiah 17, which has a lot to say about human nature and the heart of man and the wickedness from within. Jeremiah chapter 17, if you'd like to read along with me, get your Bible. And we'll just go through a few verses here before we run out of time. My father, though, firstly, let me just read this from the Jeremiah booklet, Jeremiah and the Greatest Vision in the Bible. He says, everywhere we look, there are problems man has not been able to solve. We are living cursed lives and usually do not even know it. Jeremiah 17 gets at the very heart of why we refuse to face and conquer our problems. He says this chapter gets to the core of the whole Bible message. I mean, this gets to the core of the whole Bible message. The theme of the Bible from cover to cover, it's about obedience. It's about God's family government. And yet this gets to the core of the Bible message, as he says there, because from the beginning, and you can see it right in the first few chapters of the Bible, from the beginning, man has been cut off from God. Man has followed the course set by Adam and Eve, who rejected God's government, who rejected God's laws. And so we live in a world cut off from God, a world influenced by Satan the devil. Notice Jeremiah 17 in verse 1. It says, the sin of Judah is written with the pen of iron and with the point of a diamond. It is graven upon the table of their heart and upon the horns of your altars. Sin, as it says there, it just gets deeply etched into our minds and hearts, written there like with a pen of iron. All kinds of addictions, weaknesses, faults, sins that are ignored, that are brushed aside. You want to talk about root causes to the problems that we see in this world. This is what you have to come to, Jeremiah 17. Verse 2 says, while their children remember their altars and their groves by the green trees upon the hills, O my mountain, in the field I will give the substance and all the treasures to the spoil and your high places for sin throughout all your borders, and you, even yourself, shall discontinue from your heritage that I gave you, and I will cause you to serve your enemies in the land which you know not. For you have kindled a fire in my anger, it says, which shall burn forever. God causes this because of how corrupt, because of how evil, because of how far removed we are from his truth, from his way of life, from the way of obedience. Verse 5 says, thus says the Lord, cursed be the man that trusts in man and makes flesh his arm, and whose heart departs from the eternal. See, they're under a curse. Nations, entire nations under a curse for no longer trusting in God. They trust in men. And this is a curse, a great curse, to place our trust, our faith in human beings. That would include self. I mean, this is the fundamental lesson that man hasn't learned for 6,000 years, that we're cursed if we follow a man. Verse 6 says, for he shall be like the heath in the desert, and shall not see when good comes, but shall inhabit the parched places in the wilderness, in the salt land, and not inhabited. Blessed is the man. See, here's the other. Blessed is the man that trusts in the Lord. See, we come under a curse. We're like a barren desert when we trust in men. But it says in verse 7, blessed is the man that trusts in the Lord and whose hope the Lord is, for he shall be as the tree planted by the waters, and that spreads out her roots by the river, and shall not see when heat comes, nor her leaf, but her leaf shall be green, it says, and shall not be careful in the year of the drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit. See, if we want to be blessed, then we have to put our faith, our trust in God. Those who trust God bear fruit. Those who trust God lead fruitful lives. They're like trees planted by the waters, as it says here, with deep, strong roots. They can survive a drought. They can still bear fruit. But we have to look to God for guidance and direction. We have to bring God into the discussion. We have to bring God into the conference. We have to let God lead. Because look at verse 9. It says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Who can know it? Well, man doesn't know. This is basic. You're talking about a core theme of the Bible. This deceitful heart, this wicked heart, this dangerously sick heart, it's the heart of man that's leading this world to destruction. It's the hatred in man. It's the selfishness in man. It's man's unwillingness to trust in God, to obey the great Creator God, that's bringing this world right to the brink. My father wrote in that booklet on the prophet Jeremiah, it says, understanding this profound verse, he's speaking of Jeremiah 17:9, understanding this profound verse is more important than any education in this world. I mean, look at what they're getting in education today, in modern education, on university campuses. I mean, playing with Play-Doh, of all things. This is the most important education that you could receive. Just understanding this profound verse. He says, when we understand it, radical action is necessary. The greatest need is to understand God, to let Him reveal our own sickness and heal it. That's our greatest need. And unless we're willing to learn that lesson, we're going to experience more curses. But what a blessing. What a blessing to receive instruction and direction from God, to understand God's truth. Verse 10 continues, I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. See, we're blessed. We're blessed according to the fruit of our doings. That's why God says, Jesus said it in the Gospels, that we ought to judge by fruits. God searches the heart. He knows our hearts. He tries the reins. He can heal the sick. He can lead a captive people out of Egypt. He can lead us out of this deceived world. He can open our minds to understand the truth of the Bible. Back up a few pages here in conclusion. Just look at Jeremiah 10. Jeremiah 10 and verse 23. It says here, O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It's not in man that walks to direct his steps. O Lord, correct me, but with judgment, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. If we really understand the depth of these passages in the book of Jeremiah, then it should motivate us all the more to go to God and to pray for instruction, to pray for understanding, to pray even for correction, for God to guide our steps. The course of your life is in God's hands. It really is. And so let Him lead. Let Him guide you. Pray for Him to correct you daily. so that we might, as Jesus said, so we might be accounted worthy to escape what's coming. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. We're broadcasting this program from Edstone in Britain, thanks to the live stream that you can receive if you have internet access at kpcg.fm. Don't forget to send us your emails, your feedback. Send it to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.